listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Congressman Chris Stewart is in the House in a virtual sense. I think we've caught up with him in God's country down in Utah, but we're speaking with him on the phone to get his thoughts on what's going on with this very heated controversy about did the Russians involve themselves in our election and to what effect, and what were they trying to accomplish? Was it just uncertainty or something even more malevolent? Congressman Stewart, I wanted to ask you about one other piece of this, and that is the suggestion that I think is fair to draw from the behavior of some of your Democratic colleagues on the Hill and elsewhere, that they're kind of making hay with this, it would appear, for the purpose of kind of undermining the incipient Trump presidency and perhaps even trying to head it off altogether, making hay with electors who are supposed to meet next Monday. Would you give us your thoughts on what's going on that front and its implications?
Well, and again, it kind of comes back to what you were saying earlier. If the Russians wanted to undermine faith in our constitutional, you know, process of electing our president, you know, it's too bad that we're playing into their hands to some degree with this, because some of this nonsense, for example, that I hear, that we have to take all of the electorals and suddenly do a security background clearance on them to the top secret level and then provide them with security brief. I mean, it's just silliness. And for those who are encouraging the electorals to be unfaithful, it's just silliness. It doesn't represent the will of the American people. We've had an election. We've had a duly constituted winner. He's going to be the next president of the United States. And it's not terribly surprising to me, but it's unfortunate that I see this and the panic on the left to undermine or to diminish him before he even takes office. My heavens, let's give this man a chance to govern. Let's give him a chance to collect a cabinet around him and see what they do. And I just got to tell you, look, I haven't been as optimistic as I feel right now for many, many years. I think we have a chance like Ronald Reagan in 1980 to fundamentally change the way the federal government interacts with its citizens, to cut back the bureaucracy, to get the government off the boot of the throat of small businesses and to do tax reform that will reinvigorate our economy for the next 20 years. There's so much good that we could do.
These are all presumably things that are horrifying the Democrats and causing them to seek to undermine him before he gets going. Congressman, you're talking a bit about what the political dimensions of all of this might be. One other angle on this story is, of course, while you say correctly that Donald Trump has indicated he seeks to restore peace through strength as our policy and rebuild our military, which I know is near and dear to your heart as it is to mine as an agenda. But there's also, you know, evidence that he's interested in improving relations with Vladimir Putin and that he has picked as his Secretary of State designate a man who presumably is well positioned to do that, having a long-standing personal relationship with him, that is Rex Tillerson. What are your thoughts on that part of the agenda, and particularly the possibility that Mr. Tillerson may be too close to Putin for comfort?
Well, I think there's some who have concern about that, and I think there's probably going to be some questions that he needs to answer about that, but I'm okay with that. But I would start with this presumption. Well, first, are there any one of the appointees that Mr. Trump has selected that haven't had heads exploding all around the country, whether it's the director of the EPA or General Mad Dog Mattis, who's an American hero? I mean, name them, and of course, we've been told that it's the impending doom of our country if these people are appointed. So we start with that. The second thing is, why is it a bad thing for someone to have proven that they can go into very difficult circumstances and negotiate a deal that is in their interest? Isn't that essentially the primary function of the Secretary of State, to go out and represent U.S. interests in very challenging and very, in some cases, dangerous parts of the world, and to represent and to protect those interests? And if someone's proven that they can do that, why is that a bad thing? Again, I just think we need to give him a chance to answer whatever questions there might be, but my starting point is that he seems very qualified for that.
Congressman, let me take the remaining time we have with you on another issue that will be very much vexing, I'm sure, the president-elect as he comes into office, namely Iran. You have been quite vocal in your criticism of what I call the Obama bomb deal. What is your current reading on the state of play with respect to that deal? There's talk that the Iranians say the sanctions extension that you all voted for before you left town is a deal breaker. They're out. They're going to pursue their nuclear program. A lot of other very dangerous misbehavior being supported by them, presumably with money we've put in their coffers. What's your view, and what would you be recommending to the president-elect he do about that deal?
Yeah, well, it's important to recognize that the extension of sanctions that we voted on last week had nothing at all to do with the Iranian nuclear deal. They were independent sanctions based on other actions, and for them to claim they were going to withdraw from the treaty because of that is an example of something that many of us were afraid of, and that was that once they received the benefits of this deal, i.e. $152 billion in sanction reliefs and cash that is being provided them, much of it, as you know, with these fantastic stories of unmarked bills and euros in the middle of the night on unmarked airplanes landing in Tehran, for example. And, you know, why would they do that other than that way they could use that money to fund their terrorist organizations around the world and couldn't be traced back to them? But you know, once again, they've said they're going to withdraw, and they might have more incentive for doing that now that they've had the sanctions release and the cash. But many of us said they're going to look for reasons to withdraw anyway. But coming to the second point, and that is, it's complicated now because they did get most of the cash that they were hoping and the sanctions relief that they were hoping to have, and they had the economic benefit from that. And now I think the question is, how do we actually move forward and either through this treaty and implementing it, or what I think is more likely, and that is, you know, we're going to have to come back to sanctions to actually keep them from moving forward on their weapons program. But it's going to be a challenge for the next president. There's no doubt. The president was banking on this. He knew that once this treaty was in place, it was going to be very hard to back out of it once they had their economic sanctions lifted.
That's President Obama, of course. Yeah. One of the other things that he's doing to further lock it in, I guess, as you know, Congressman Stewart, is promoting various commercial transactions with the Iranians, notably approving the sale of billions of dollars worth of aircraft by the Boeing company. What are your thoughts on the advisability of that transaction, especially in light of what we've seen the Iranians doing fairly recently, kind of in our face, using some of the Boeing aircraft they already have in their inventory as part of their power projection exercises?
Yeah, I don't care how many jobs it creates. I don't care how much wealth it creates here in the United States. Dealing with an officially recognized state of terror is not good business practice. And I just feel like we need to put American interests first, and our interest is national security. And, you know, some people make the argument, well, it's 20,000 jobs. And I would say, you know, we're dealing with a state sponsor of terror. We're dealing with one of the most evil and aggressive regimes in the world. I don't think it's a great idea.
Lastly, sir, if we were to stop that transaction, should we also be trying to stop the Europeans from selling Airbuses?
Well, and you know, that's a great point. And one of the challenges we have, as I said earlier, about backing out of this deal or taking a look at the nuclear treaty is just that. And that is, have we lost the support of the Europeans? And they clearly are ahead of us on moving into economic relationships with Tehran. And they always have been. And, you know, we do have to ask that question. But at the end of the day, if they do and we can't persuade them not to, that's their decision. But that doesn't justify what is for us what I believe to be a bad decision. And last thing on this, and that is, if Iran seemed to be changing their behavior, I might think differently about this. If I really believe that they were going to respond positively to a strengthened business relationship or strengthened ties, I would feel differently about it. But they're not. There's no evidence at all that they changed their behavior in a positive way.
Congressman Stewart, I know we're at the end of our time with you. Thank you so much for your service to our country, both in uniform and that you're rendering these days in the United States House of Representatives, representing the people of the 2nd District of Utah. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon. Next up, Phil Haney will join us. We'll talk with him about the enemy within and more straight ahead.